April 4th, 1868. Its proud lines intermittently visible through the early morning fog, the Light of the East might have been the most carefree ship that ever floated into Boston. Some of the sailors, their bearded faces browned and peeling from too much sun, cracked the last rations of walnuts in their fists or under their boot heels, singing some ancient song about a girl left behind. After wild March winds, stormy seas, dangerous ports, backbreaking work, and all the extremes of experience, they'd be handed a good pay at port, then freed to lose it to the city's myriad pleasures. The navigator held the prow steady, his eye on his instruments, as they waited for the fog to disperse enough for their signal to be seen by the pilot boat. Although Boston Harbor stretched across 75 square miles, its channels had been so narrowed for purposes of defense that two large ships could not safely pass each other without the harbor pilot's assistance. The Light's austere captain, Mr. Beale, strode the deck, his rare aura of high contentment amplified by the giddiness of his men. Beale could envision in his mind's eye the pilot boat breaking through the fog toward them, the pilot dressed like an undertaker, saluting indifferently and relieving Beale for once of his burdens. Then would come the view of the stretches of docks and piers, the solid granite warehouses never quite large enough for all the foreign cargo brought in by the merchants. Then beyond that, the state house's gold dome capping the horizon, the glittering cranium of the world's smartest city. In the last few years, with so many men returned from fighting the rebellion, even modest Boston merchants had become veritable industrialists, beset as they were by excess hands. This city had prided itself on its history from the time it was little more than a quaint village, but Beale was old enough to know how artificial its modern visage was. Hills that formerly sloped through the city had been flattened, their detritus used to fill in various necks and bays. The foundations for streets and new neighborhoods and wharves, such as the one that soon would welcome them. He could remember when the public garden was plain mud marking Boston's natural boundary. A steam pipe bellowed from some unseen ship launching on its way, or maybe like them gliding toward a journey's end, and Beale felt a solemn comradeship with all unknown voyagers. As he glimpsed the crescent moon and thought he would soon have enough light, even in this nasty fog, to lay course, his pleasant reverie was broken by a bright light flashing low in the water. When the captain craned forward, a lifeboat caught in the current, right in the path of their prow, sprang out from the mist. His lookout cried out while Beale seized his speaking trumpet and shouted orders to change course. A woman's scream floated up. The schooner veered adroitly in efforts to avoid the small craft, but too late. The lifeboat's passengers jumped for their lives as their boat split into pieces against the Light's prow, the screaming woman thrusting a small child above the waves. To the shock of the captain, another obstacle broke through the dense curtain of fog on the schooner's starboard side. A pleasure steamer, with its flags flying the signals of distress and taking on water. "Clear lower deck!" Beale shouted. Light of the East had nowhere to go. The side of its hull grazed and then caught the stranded steamship, right through the forward bulkhead. Pipes snapped and scalding hot steam rushed into the heavy air as the hold of the schooner was ripped open. Now it too took on water, fast. Chaos reigned on and off the ships. Beale snapped an order to throw the cargo overboard and repeated it sharply when his men hesitated. If they didn't unload right now, they would lose not only their profits, but also the ship and likely lives. "Captain! There!" called his lookout. Beale stared in astonishment from the railing as a stray breeze parted the fog. The wharf loomed ahead, but it was now clear they were approaching it from the wrong angle, parallel instead of perpendicular. Incredulously, the captain extended his spyglass. A bark flying British colors had wrecked against the tip of one of the piers and caught fire, while another schooner marked the Gladiator had drifted against the wharf, where its crew feverishly tried to tow it in. as he watched fiery debris spread to the gladiator's sails, which an instant later were wreathed in flames.